This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
I know where I'm going, and I know who's going with me.
Written, produced and directed by Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger. It's a guarantee of technical quality, innovative characterisation, astute casting, and dialogue that will be melodic, intelligent, moving and funny, often all at once. Powell and Pressburger, that perfect team. Watching their movies will make you proud of your species and will make you feel you are, somehow, dancing. I seem to have known them all my life. From the bliss of that monochrome to technicolour transition in A Matter of Life and Death that pleased me so much as a child, to watching I Know Where I'm Going for the first time with my godchildren, all cuddled up together on the sofa, rugs over our knees, and being given that insightful, moving and truly beautiful confection as a treat they were both certain I'd enjoy. They were right. I Know Where I'm Going is simply in every way beautiful. It was made in 1945 when Powell and Pressburger's creativity was in full flower, and it's crammed with their passions and skills, and it's inexcusable I was introduced to it less than a decade ago. To begin with the filmmakers, Powell was the eccentric product of an English public school education. A man with the look of an overintense surgeon, or perhaps a gentleman mountaineer. He had a certain darkness in his passions, was a director of demanding vision and an urban Englishman who loved the Scottish wilderness. Pressburger, born in Miskolc, Hungary, was harried from Germany to France and finally to England by the Nazi threat, the gentleman and the exile. Both men had a clear outsider's eye and a fierce understanding of those precious intangibles which sustain life. In I Know Where I'm Going, they're talking about love. Not the Kim Hunter and David Niven kind of romantic love that would redefine heaven in A Matter of Life and Death. This is the big, scary, grown-up, inconvenient kind of love that redefines lives. And it's surrounded by the metallic light of seascapes, playful experimentation and waves of evocative music in a Scotland peopled by real Scottish performers with real Scottish accents. Imagine. Here's a post-feudal Highland community showing us a concern at the root of democracy. Are we valued in money or something more profound? And here is Wendy Hiller at her luminous, high-cheeked best in a manifestly powerful, intelligent and truthful female leading role. How many of them do you see? Ever. She's Joan Webster, a bank manager's daughter who is on the brink of marriage with Consolidated Chemical Industries, or rather its owner, Sir Robert Beringer. Hiller and the writing mean Joan isn't just a gold digger. She's a strong, driven, fascinating human being who is taking a wrong turn, who is sickening for lack of a real challenge. Still, when the film starts, Joan knows exactly where she's going. Her journey's details have been carefully typed, and she is couriered like a pampered parcel through the convolutions of travel in 1940s Britain. She passes from England to Scotland, in a haze of anxiety dreams and tartan night mountains. She reaches Glasgow, Tobermory, the Mull quayside where the boat will deliver her to Killoran, the film's name for Colonsay, where her faux Highland wedding will take place. And then it all goes wrong. Or rather, right. Fog means the ferry can't cross. Her itinerary blows away, and here, in the shadow of Moy Castle and its curse, is Torquil McNeil, home on leave from the Merchant Navy. Another strong human being in pressed motion who will only be stilled by remarkable circumstances. Their first words, good evening, are simultaneous, as if their natures are impatient to correspond. Torquil is played by Roger Livesey, an actor with a voice like smoked velvet and a careful delivery suited to Torquil's ability to ration his pleasures. James Mason had refused the part. Livesey lost weight to play it and brings a mature, stage-fit energy to the role that works beautifully. Livesey's profile is strong, even predatory. The film's other Torquil is an eagle named after him, but his performance is mainly gentle. West End commitments restricted Livesey to scenes filmed at Denham Studios. For the Scottish shots, Powell works with the doubles turned back and necessary distance to lend a sense that Torquil is always preserving his privacy, if not running away. And Livesey is perfect in his portrayal of the patience and doting horror of someone whose new love is, at the least, strange. Because Joan presents herself as set on an uncomfortably comfortable lifestyle with Berenger.
You didn't mind what they said?
I thought it was nonsense. Why shouldn't one build a swimming pool if one wants to? Personally, I like swimming pools.
Matter of taste.
Exactly. I also prefer to call up the fishmonger if I want to eat some salmon instead of wading about knee-deep in water waiting for salmon to pass by.
Really?
Really.
Torquil doesn't try to change Joan, because this isn't just a love story. It's about respect for oneself and others. Torquil thinks enough of Joan to believe she'll find her true self. He waits. Meanwhile, like cautious lovers everywhere, myself among them, Joan and Torquil struggle against affections they didn't anticipate and could do without. First fog, and then the clearing wind Joan wished for, careful what you wish for, has trapped them on Mull. The next morning Joan can only talk to Berenger via the post office radio. We are wonderfully far from the days of texting, tweeting, Skyping, and eternal access to all areas of everyone. In a lovely detail, she asks if he has a cold. He already sounds strange to her. As Torquil listens, Berenger makes assumptions about who is worth knowing and mentions sending Joan the ring she'd shown off to her father. It's not on display now. Hiller touches an extravagant jewelled brooch she's wearing as if it's a gift she regrets. Torquil has already admitted he's the true owner of Killoran. Berenger is renting the island, paying for the duration to play with what Torquil loves in his bones. And as Laird of Killoran we learn, Torquil must never enter Moy Castle for fear of that curse. That he's content to be bound by a myth suggests both weakness and humility. He also won't storm Joan's defences. She'll have to struggle with them herself. The pair move on to separate rooms in a hotel, and she's already in trouble.
I want to ask you something.
Anything.
Do you mind if we sit at separate tables at lunch? You do understand, don't you?
Of course I don't mind. We are strangers, not even properly introduced.
Yes, but you understand why I am asking you.
We understand, and nuanced performances show us the heat below the surface calm. That night, our pair end up at a Cayley. It's very harmonious. The wonderful Glasgow Orpheus Choir are in attendance, and there's an aching heart in every corner. The wedding pipers were intended for Joan's marriage on Killoran. Instead, they play My Nut Brown Maiden for the million-year-old Campbell's wedding anniversary, while a McNeil love reveals itself hard, needing, injured, wonderful. If, like me, you've never found romance easy, but you mean it when you try, this is the film for you.
That's a fine song. Nut Brown Maiden, do you know?
Tune up, Piper!
It goes... A roe, not brown maiden, a ree, not brown maiden. A roe, 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 maiden, you're the maid for me.
In the morning, Joan, completely desperate, still can't persuade Rory Moore, the boatman, to ferry her away. He has no interest in her money and won't go to sea in a gale. So Joan does a terrible thing. She bribes young Kenny, Rory's apprentice, into making the trip by offering him £20, enough to buy a half share in Rory's boat and marry Rory's daughter, Bridie. Joan will risk someone else's life, as well as her own, just to be free of inconvenient love. Once Katrina has explained that Joan's apparent insanity is his fault, Torquil rushes to captain the boat if she must go. Joan is brave on board, and Torquil's clearly expert, but the tiny craft's engine gets flooded and they are being pulled towards the Corryvreck and Whirlpool, whose massive horrors Torquil has already described. He has also told the tale of a suitor saved from the maelstrom by true love. And in the midst of chaos, in an almost certainly doomed boat, our lovers are finally at peace. Joan, Torquil and Kenny escape, naturally, by the skin of their teeth, returning home with a distinctly post-coital air. Torquil the Eagle is back, too, magnificent and tamed in a way we've been told a woman can't be. When the weather clears the following day, Joan is nevertheless bound for Killoran. Torquil is staying on Mull. Joan will face her wedding alone. She asks for a parting kiss and gets one that's surely mind-changing, but no, she heads for the quayside. Torquil ventures into Moy Castle, where we hear a former laird murdered his wife and her lover, chaining them together in a well. Before she drowned, the wife uttered the curse now carved into the castle wall that any subsequent laird crossing Moy's threshold will be chained to a woman to the end of his days. At which point, marching behind the three pipers who play My Nut-Brown Maiden, here's Joan. She finally really knows where she's going, right to the place where Torquil until now never could, and they surrender to each other in the castle, and it's beautiful. It's the victory in defeat which is love. Enjoy.
I was lying to you. I'd rather swim in the sea than in a swimming pool.
I know.
And I'd rather catch salmon in my own stream if somebody teach me how.
I know.
And I'd rather go to Lauren in Rory Moore's boat after the hell I've raised.
And I was lying to you, too. I'm not really afraid of this place.
I know.
Never shall he leave it a free man. He shall be chained to a woman to the end of his days, and he shall die in his chains.